Good morning, afternoon, or evening, whichever the case may be, and thank you for taking a few moments out of your day to listen to me ramble on about whatever it is I'm rambling on about today. This is somewhere around the 8th or 9th podcast that Frankie and I have recorded. However, he's not here today. This is going to be the first of hopefully many podcasts in a series that I hope will be as entertaining as it is educational. I'm fairly new to podcasting, and I'm still learning everything about it as I can as I go along. In fact, most experts apparently say that if you want to be successful at podcasting, you must be on iTunes, and that you should feasibly do at least 5 to 7 a week for the first few months, so the robots or aliens or whoever controls iTunes are tricked into believing that you are a big player. And that gets you on their new and noteworthy, I guess. I don't really remember because I stopped paying attention because they went off on some diatribe about something that was really kind of boring to me. I did, however, catch and have noticed that with most of the successful podcasts I listen to, many of them have many, many, many short episodes under 10 minutes compared to the lengthier episodes of over 30 minutes or more. Which is how you end up getting 5 to 7 a week. And I'm not sure how I feel about that, but we'll give it a shot. I guess I don't know how I felt about it because I didn't really know what was I going to talk about for under 10 minutes that's interesting and serves as an appetizer to the main podcast. I was thinking about this as I was driving across town with a Zhao Dynasty bronze urn, or actually incense burner, in the shape of a phoenix, three-legged phoenix, in the back seat of my truck. I was taking it across town to hopefully have it authenticated. I paid quite a bit of money for it, way more than I should have, and way more than I could afford at the time. But I was feeling good about it, and I believed it was from a reputable new friend I had met and trusted. His house is truly a museum of artifacts from centuries and eons ago. Long story short, it is not a period piece, and I completely overpaid for it. It's not even a bronze, and there are very many obvious telltale signs that a novice like myself probably wouldn't know and probably should know, but a reputable dealer would easily know. Was I swindled? Was I taken for a fool? Am I a little too trusting? These were all things I was pondering as I carried my Griffin back to my truck. It seemed hotter today than 115, if that even seems possible. As I drove home heavy-hearted, it came to me. The hardest part and the most rewarding part for me is not the money I spent or overspent, or even the piece itself. However, I do love it and I will keep it. It's the knowledge that I earned from it. There is so much research in what I do for every estate and every unit I buy. I learned more today about bronzes and pottery than I have ever known. I'm a little ashamed to admit that. But at the same time, it's not my world. I don't know that. I've never seen this stuff before. How do you learn this? It's not like you can just walk into Walmart and pick up a book on bronzes from Zhao Dynasty, which is 900 or 800 BC, or that you would even know what you're looking at if you saw it. I didn't know. I just believed what he told me, and that's the problem. And most of the experts out there are no help. And if they do want to help you, they charge $300 an hour for an appraisal. And maybe they've earned the right. They've worked hard for that knowledge. Lord knows I know that very well. It's tough trying to research this stuff that you've just come across. But sometimes, most of the time, they live in a completely separate world than the average person, and certainly in a different world than I live in. They live in an auction world, and you hear it every day if you watch shows like American Pickers or Antiques Roadshow. They say, in a good auction setting, well, if you've never submitted anything to an auction, be ready for some disappointment. Imagine how many people watch those shows and submit things on their website because it's free. And imagine how many of those people do that daily. How many artifacts and things that they get every day compared to the number of auctions they do. Most of those well-known auction houses do maybe 6 auctions a year. And they are researching stuff 6 months, 8 months, a year, sometimes even 2 years out. They have the option to pick and choose what they want. So even though you may have a $10,000 bronze, who cares? They're looking for the $100,000 bronzes or something that they know their people are looking for. It's a very tight world. Everything's a very tight world. It's all nepotism, at least in that market. And again, they have the right to be very, very picky. That's what they're known for. So where am I going with this? No, I am not an expert on anything. Maybe a few things, but nothing of any importance to anybody, I suppose. Maybe I'll get some experts on here later down the road. Maybe I'll find a few hidden gems that people actually want to talk about or are happy to share their knowledge. But I do have a beginning knowledge on most things that come through my fingers. Information that is very important to novices or people that are out there cruising thrift stores and garage sales and stuff like that. And so, like the phoenix rising from the ashes, hopefully the money I burned on this bronze, or not bronze, will rise through the ashes into knowledge imparted through a podcast series that is both educational and entertaining. If that doesn't work out, I'll just start a YouTube channel with Frankie trying on women's clothing I purchased at thrift stores. Seems to work for everybody else. And so, without further ado, the first episode in this mini podcast series, The Phoenix Bronze. You can look at these pictures. They'll be on the website, findersthrift.com, and you can kind of see what I'm talking about. So this bronze, or so-called bronze, is pretty massive for the period. And these are all things that I learned from my expert. And my expert is someone I trust very, very much. He's a PhD in this stuff, and his shop has probably, I don't know, $5 to $10 million worth of inventory. And that's about 100 pieces. Yeah, I said 100 pieces. The place is amazing. So it stands, it's two pieces. It's the actual animal, which is a three-legged phoenix. It is sitting on its hind leg, on its legs, and the hind leg is actually the trunk of an elephant. Also, it's not actually an elephant. It's a mythological beast called a Qinling, which stands in Chinese mythology. It means strength. It stands for strength. But to you and me, the average person, it looks like an elephant. It's a phoenix standing up, and on its back is an urn or a vase type thing, and that vase type thing comes off, and that would have been an incense burner. This is a ceremonial piece, or actually not, almost not ceremony, it would have been a burial piece. Almost all bronzes apparently were burial pieces, and they were for rich people, obviously. This is to help them, guide them through the next life or into the next life. So it has all sorts of really, really cool carvings of birds on the side of it. And here's the problems with it that I didn't know, or I do know now, and I will impart on you. First and foremost, which I do know, and I don't know why I didn't check it, but I guess it's because, again, it was from somebody I trusted. Bronze is not magnetic. Very, very rarely is it magnetic, especially from that period. And this one is very, very faintly magnetic, which means there is iron in it of some sort. So that's a telltale sign. Number two, it is very, very light. If you've ever picked up a bronze is extremely heavy. It's almost like cast iron is the best layman's terms I can give you. It's extremely heavy compared to any other alloy. So this is probably a copper and tin or aluminum based with some metal in it. And the other big telltale sign on it is there are seams. You can see welded seams if you look closely on the legs and on the neck of the bird and on the inside of the urn, you can see them. And again, you'll see those pictures on my website if you're interested in looking. They had no way of welding anything in 900 BC, which makes a whole lot of sense when you think about it. But if you're not thinking about it and you don't know it, you don't really think about it. Any bronze from that period would have had to have been cast as one piece. There was two pieces that locked into place or held each other, much like this. The vase would have been cast separately and then it would have fit into place. But you can't put legs on something or wings on something. And at that point in time, it would have had to have been one giant piece. So those are the biggest flaws with it. It is a very cool piece. I am actually still very happy with it. I love it. I think it's very, very awesome and interesting. So I asked my expert, I said, when do you think this was made? I mean, contemporary what? He's like, I don't know, probably 1980s or something. And I was like, are you kidding me? 1980s? He's like, yeah. He's like, it doesn't really matter when it was made. He said, in his world and in that world, the vintage on it is the lowest part of the proverbial totem pole. Number one, it's the maker. Who's the artist, if you know who that is? Number two, the materials that are made. Number three, the size of the material, size of it and the materials made. And number four is the vintage. It's like you could very easily come across a piece that was made 10 or 20 years ago that is worth hundreds of thousands of dollars which is way more valuable than a piece. He's like, I could pull you a piece that's 7,000 years old and it's only worth $40 or $50 because it's just not a very good piece, or there were so many of it, it was just a utilitarian piece, which is kind of sad to realize, but I guess it's good to know that. And he said it's just because it was done in the 1980s, he's like, it's a really cool piece. He's like, you don't see them a lot. He said, I think it was probably made in macaw, and he threw out macaw as if it were like the Kmart of Asia. Apparently, they're making all sorts of crap over there. And he said, but it's still a cool piece. He's like, it's a great decorator piece. It's beautiful. He's like, you don't see them like that a lot. It would have been very, very high up as size and everything for someone very, very important. So again, like I said, it's a cool piece. It's not period, but it is style-esque. And he said it's actually, I think he said it was the Qin Lao period, not the Zhao period, as my guy had told me. He also said beauty's in the eye of the beholder. He said he didn't think I completely overpaid on it. He said I probably, for a decorative piece, he paid high retail setting. I'm all right on it, but not as bad as I thought. So I absolutely love Chinese and Asian artifacts, so I'm sure I'll come across or stumble across other pieces that I also screw up on, and maybe sometimes I won't screw up on. But this is the first time I've seen anything like it, so I picked it up, and that's one of the rules I live by. If you see something that you've never seen before, the only time you're going to get to buy it is when you see it, so buy it. The other ones I live by are, if you don't know what you have, don't sell it, because whoever's going to buy it isn't going to tell you what it's worth, and that's the rule number three, is never, ever, ever sell to your appraisers. That's just bad business for both parties. Remember the website, findersthrift.com. That's where you can see pictures of all the stuff I'm talking about. They will also be on the Instagram page, but they're going to probably be harder to find if you're just now listening to this and it's months later. But just go to the website. I'll keep them on there. And thanks for listening.